Let's see, is the mic on? Buddy Guy said, if you ain't breaking strings, you ain't playing. Well, today I'm going to break some strings. We're going to let the Orny Adams out. What's wrong with Orny Adams? Episode 102. 102! Here we are in Big Yellow in Los Angeles, California. A lot warmer than it was in Chicago and Traverse City, Michigan. I'm going to bring this down because I got to tell you something is going on. Something is going on in my career, and I've never seen anything like it. I've never seen crowds like I saw in Chicago. I'm fired up! Something's going on. Something's turned. And I'm going to discuss that, and I will discuss... I'll be very frank with you about me getting booked at all these venues and how I'm doing it and all that sort of stuff. But I want to thank everyone. I want to thank the listeners. I want to thank everyone that subscribes to my podcast, that watches this on YouTube, that listens to it on Spotify and Google and Apple Podcasts. Thank you, everybody, because without you, this isn't happening. And without you, what happened in Chicago, and it looks like it's happening in other cities too. Selling out my shows in Sarasota, Florida. We just added a new show for Thursday night. It's really kind of cool. I wish I could explain it, and I'm going to do my best. But first, here's some more Buddy Guy. I watched a documentary on the plane yesterday. Actually, it was Sunday. It was Sunday. I was gone for 10 days. I was on the road for 10 days. I've got plenty of stories, plenty of things that went wrong. Remarkably, a lot of things went great. I'm inspired. I've got a little skip in my step. Little skip in my career. Step. You know, that would have been a great moment if I didn't just mess it up. This is what, buddy, I was watching this documentary. It wasn't a great documentary in the sense of how it was shot. You know, it was one of those music documentaries where they play an entire song and then Buddy would talk. And there weren't enough testimonials from other people. Like, Buddy Guy is the guy. I've told the story on stage about how I saw him at the New Orleans Jazz Festival. He's the guy. He's the guy that Jimi Hendrix credits for him playing the guitar behind his neck, above his back. Clapton says he's the greatest living guitarist. Keith Richards. Now, of course, I was thinking about this. Pretty easy to say that. You know, it's easy to say that. That's the greatest living guitarist or greatest living comedian when they're not, selling out. They're not playing as big a venue. In other words, Buddy Guy's not a threat to those guys. He just doesn't have the hard ticket sales. So it's easy to say that. I wish I had asked Mark Mann when he was in here, what makes somebody like a Buddy Guy so great? I can watch him forever. There's something about watching somebody like a Buddy Guy's hands move on the neck of the guitar that just makes me smile, makes me feel warm. It was like Ray Charles in the way he played piano and the way he hit those notes. And he was always like a fraction of a second later than anybody else would be. And it makes you warm. It's just something that can't be explained. It's the mathematics of music. And we also have the mathematics of stand-up comedy, which I've discussed on plenty of episodes. But, you know, as I live my life with a lot of guilt, of course, because I have access to a lot of things that many people in this world don't. I eat out a lot of meals. I don't worry about meals. I don't have to worry about a lot of things. Knock on wood. That's me knocking on wood. 1, 2, 3. When you knock on wood, do you do 3? Do you do 2? Do you do 4? Do you just knock all day? Do some people, when they knock on wood, just knock all day? Yeah. So I'm very fortunate, and I know that. And I believe in the struggle. And I think that's what I've said along forever. Like these shows like American Idol or America's Got Talent, when they take these people that have a beautiful voice, but there's no struggle in there. There's no history. They just know how to sing. And I believe pain and suffering makes better art. And I have certainly, although I never worried about things like Buddy Guy couldn't eat. Buddy Guy had no money for food. He was starving. He would play on an empty stomach. He told a story about how he and the guys he was traveling with, they went into a convenience store and they were going to hold it up before their show. So they were going to, four of them were going to distract the clerk asking questions or paying for things. And then somebody else was going to go in with an overcoat and steal meat in a can. I can't remember what he called it, or beans and canned meat. And what happened was they drove 80 miles. They pulled off on the side of the road. They were going to have a poor person picnic of the crackers that they had. And with this meat, which was a luxury, canned meat from basically a 7-Eleven. And the guy starts pulling the canned meat out of the pocket. And he had grabbed dog food instead and cat food. So now they ate that. That's struggle. Nobody wants to embrace the struggle anymore. They want to put in 1 minute. They want to post it on the internet. They want to go viral. Well, I got news for you. A lot of people that go viral, they don't live up to it. They don't live up to it. They don't last that long. I've been pounding the road for 30 plus years. And although I don't sell as many tickets as some people, I put on a hell of a show. And that's why I relate to a Buddy Guy. I think it must be fascinating to have influenced all these people that are more successful than you. And how that must feel. But Buddy Guy said this. This is a Buddy Guy quote. Nobody ever sat me down and said, here's a B flat. Here's an F sharp. I had to figure that out myself. After I started playing with a band, I'm 82 years old. Most of the people above me, John Lee Hooker, Lightning Hopkins, I faced them. I watched their hands to see where they were going. They played by ear. And that's how I play now. I play by ear. I don't play by the rules. He's got the blues. He's got the blues. Damn right Buddy Guy has the blues. If you don't know Buddy Guy, if you're a younger listener, you got to know your history. You got to know where all this stuff started and where it came from. When you watch James Brown and you watch the show he puts on and the outfits, you see Michael Jackson, you see current hip hop, you see the evolution, and you've got to respect that. These aren't relics. These aren't people to be ignored. This history has brought us to where we are artistically, and they struggled. Buddy Guy came from nothing in Louisiana, nothing. They couldn't afford a screen on the house. They were being bit by mosquitoes. He said, at some point, I just gave up and let the mosquitoes bite me. They were trying to save like less than a dime to buy a screen. And you just sit there and you think, wow, I'm so lucky. And I don't want to be a spoiled brat. That's why, like, I don't care. You'll see me in coach flying sometimes. I don't care. If I'm in a middle seat in coach for a few hours, how does that really affect my life? You should see the car I drive. I could drive another car. I choose to drive an older car. You know why? It works. I've had it forever. I bought it brand new. It still works. The only time I feel, sometimes I pull up to these expensive restaurants, or like if I go to like a private show where they're paying me a lot of money, I feel it sometimes. But for the most part, it's like, who cares? That's your ego. Suffering is okay. Not every meal has to be the greatest meal you ever ate. And sometimes I feel a little guilty. I look at the news, I look at all the people and what they're going through in other countries, and I don't want to name it, or other places, or even in this country. And it gets to me. It gets to me. I should read this Yogi Berra. Somebody sent me this. And I have so much to talk about. In fact, let me be negative. Why am I being so positive? This is called What's Wrong with Oney Adams. And I'm fired up. Let me talk about my trip. Let me talk about me first, and I'll talk about the other people that and other stories I've come across that have influenced me and excited me. I have a story that I read in the New York Times, which is so inspirational, and I'll do that at the end. But first, I flew into Traverse City, Michigan via Detroit in the middle of a snowstorm. We couldn't even land. First of all, we landed in Detroit. Everything was fine. Then we couldn't take off. We were delayed 2 hours. Why? Somehow Detroit didn't have a ground crew to push us back from the gate. Well, let me tell you something. There's about 150 people on this plane. We could just start pushing it back. But how does Detroit Airport not have... This was a scheduled flight. It was leaving on time. You didn't have a crew in line? This doesn't make me feel very safe when I fly. Airports aren't even, they don't even have the crew to push us back. Then we land in Traverse City. You got to see this video. We sat on the tarmac in Traverse City, Michigan for a good 45 minutes. Now it's like 2 o'clock in the morning. We're all exhausted. And we had to wait for a ground crew there too, which makes sense because it's a small airport. But what I didn't realize was the ground crew had to shovel us out. They had to shovel. You know when the plane pulls into that like berth? And you're right next to the door where you exit from that area. A person with a shovel. Two people came out, one shovel. Traverse City, Michigan doesn't even have two shovels. Traverse City, Michigan Airport doesn't even have two shovels. They had one shovel and two people taking a turn. And these guys got exhausted rather quick. I remember shoveling as a kid. I could shovel for a good half hour before taking a break. And their technique was horrible. I can't believe these people live where there's snow. Like you have to like push a little and then throw it. Push a little, throw it. They were like, I don't know, like using it like a broom. I sat there. You got to see this video. The window's really frosty, so it's hard to see. But this is people shoveling so our plane can pull in. What? Who shoveled the runway? Like all this stuff makes me really nervous. But I have to say this. Traverse City, Michigan is probably a great place in the summer. What I was doing there in January, I don't know. It was so cold that people tried to travel from other parts of Michigan and they didn't even make it in. But I was playing this theater, seats about 600, the Traverse City Opera House, and it was nice. Nice balcony, people up there. It was a great audience. I loved it. I'd love to play more theaters like this. It's just unique and beautiful. The sound, everybody couldn't be nicer. They're not jaded by having comedians every week. And I'd like to go back when it's nice. You know, it's right on a lake. Lake was frozen. Some guy, as we were, the day before Traverse City, they're a great story. Guy fell into the lake and his dog sat by his, you know, on the ice by the side. The dog didn't figure out the ice could break even more, and now the dog's in the water. But this is how loyal the dog was. And then when the rescue team came, and thank God they came, because we know it's always nowadays, the decision everybody has to make when there's a tragedy is, do I film or do I help? So a guy falls in a lake. Okay, here's my game. Guy falls in a lake. Do I run and get a rope or do I film to go viral and get more attention in my life? This is where we're at as a society. Well, the rescue guy came. He couldn't get out there to give him like the rope. So he said, send your dog. So he sent his dog and the dog got the rope and then carried it back. It's like something out of a movie. I don't have a dog, but if you have a dog, would your dog go if you sent the dog to somebody else, if you're like, go, Fido, go. Go grab the rope. And then the dog knew to come back. Anyway, the guy was in his 60s. He's alive. And that was a big story there in Traverse City, Michigan. I thought me coming was a big story. Now, why that dog wasn't at the airport helping? That dog could have helped. Dog could have used his little paws and done a little, you know, after they urinate, the little kick up. Could have kicked up some of that snow. That's all I'm saying. Gas in Traverse City, Michigan, I paid $2.87 a gallon. I think in Los Angeles, it's double. I don't know why we pay so much. I think it's taxes. I'm starting to really get aggravated. When you're in Los Angeles, everything's more expensive. I'll talk about eating. I'll talk about eating out. And all that stuff. Yeah, here's what happened. I should say this. Let me take a sip of my coffee, and then I'll, because I have an announcement. Besides the fact that I've got some great tour dates coming up, I should say that first. I will now that we've gotten rid of Chicago and Traverse City, Michigan, I will now concentrate on my dates. I will be coming up at McCurdy's Comedy Club in Sarasota, Florida. This is the week of Valentine's Day. So Valentine's Day is Wednesday. I was supposed to be there Friday. I am there Friday and Saturday. So Valentine's Day is the 14th. That means the 15th is Thursday. So 16th and 17th, I think I have this right, of February, I'm at McCurdy's in Sarasota. Tickets are selling so well, we added a show on Thursday. And now those tickets are selling. I'm sitting there going, I can't believe this. Because for so many years, I would sit there and refresh the seat map. And I go, come on, people, buy tickets. But something has turned. I don't know if it's my comedy special. I don't know if it's this podcast. I don't know if it's all the other podcasts I'm doing. I don't know if it's the social media. I don't know if it's Teen Wolf. I don't know if it's just years and years and years of doing shows. But something is happening and tickets are selling. And it's like, oh, I can't believe it. I couldn't be happier. And I think it's like we did it because there's this system. There's this system. I don't work within the system. I tried to work within the system. Even when I was in the system, it wasn't working for me when I had agents and managers. And I just said, you know what? I'm going full outside the system. I'm going to see if I can do it myself. I'm going to see if I can rally the people to support me, which is happening. More Than Loud on YouTube is about to hit 5 million views, either today or tomorrow. 5 million people have watched that special. Now, go look at those numbers compared to other people's numbers. Those are real organic numbers. Look at the comments underneath. Start reading the comments on my social media. Not the ones for Lithuania. Don't read that video where I upset the entire country of Lithuania, wherever that is angry at me. But if you look at the comments under my videos, it is, or even under Instagram or TikTok or Facebook, and it's like, it's happening. In Chicago, people were wearing shirts I forgot I even sold. The old Coach from Teen Wolf Finstock t-shirts that said, shut it. There were people there with the original Rate This Human t-shirts. In fact, somebody bought one off of my website yesterday. If you want merch, it's on my website. I'm not going to do the sell right now. OrnieAdams.com. There you go. But something's happening. The show's for Saturday night were sold out in advance. And then it got kind of boring because for my entire career, I've been like, you know, the day of, excited to see where the ticket sales go. And then when you're sold out, you're like, well, now what do I have to look forward to? It's not to look forward to anymore. But Sarasota, I've never seen anything like this. Adding a show, like there's something happening. I'm selling tickets in Los Angeles. Selling out the Ice House. I'll be there, by the way, March 2nd, the Ice House in Pasadena. I'll be there again. I'm going back to the Comedy and Magic Club. The dates are up on OrnieAdams.com/tour. Tickets are selling, and I'm not bragging. And if I am bragging, I've worked 30 years doing this. You know when you get up and you play video games and you're messing around and you're just not doing anything? I'm editing my own videos. I'll edit this video for this podcast. I'll take the SD cards out of these three cameras, upload it on my computer in my office, and I'll edit it myself. And by the way, big fan of SD cards. I put one through the wash, still works. Those things are resilient. I hope it still works. I should be recording this just for backup, just in case it doesn't work. Anyway, I've put in the work. Buddy Guy put in the work. I'm not comparing myself to Buddy Guy, but I respect people that put in the work. And I think if you came back to Chicago and there were people there that one couple has seen me 12 times. Other people, several times. Guy came up to me and said, I know in your special, you talked about how this couple, they were on a blind date when they came to see your, I don't know why my headsets are on, why they came to see your stand-up show. And then they're married now and they have kids. He said, that's us. We have three kids. I said, that's unbelievable. Now stop having kids. Three's enough. So many repeat people. Again, read the comments. People come back. And I think if you were at the show last year and you were at the show this year, you saw a really different show and something really cool. And I felt empowered. In fact, there are routines that I love to do. I look forward to it in my act because I know they work and it gives me a breather. A mental breather. I can sit on stage and do this, be in the moment, and know it's going to work. And I don't have to think, where am I going next? And I didn't do some of those bits this weekend. I didn't. I was doing a 70-minute show. I would have done longer, but we're sold out. And I, by the way, I've never seen, when you sell out, the staff is like, you know, door people are like, listen, you're sold out. You're Ornie Adams. You don't walk around without somebody around you. We gotta protect you. I'm like the quarterback for the weekend. You know how they protect the quarterback? They protect the headliner when he sells out. Selling merch, I always sell it like in the lobby. We had to take an annex, this off room. We had an operation. We had four people selling this merch and directing people. And then we had the zigzag line, people lined up. Then we had a ring light and someone taking pictures. There were five people involved or six people. And that went on for an hour. Everybody lined up. Everybody bought something. Everybody wanted a picture. Everybody wanted to show me pictures of me with them in the past at other shows. People wanted to set me up with their kids. You got a daughter? You got a granddaughter that is single? Of course you want big time Ornie Adams as a son-in-law. Of course it makes sense. And I see this, I say, wow, this is so cool. You know, I worked with the same manager for years and we stopped working together last year and he would love this. In fact, I know if he saw it, he would still love it. I know he's still rooting for me. And it's cool. But when you, and I'm all jazzed up, you know what I mean? I got the little skip in my career step. I got a skip in my career step. A little bit confident, maybe overly confident. So I start, you know, hey, are we gonna fill this date? We're going to do this? And then, you know, and the excuse these bookers always give is, well, we don't know. You haven't been to this market. We don't know how you're going to do. Been to this market? There's no markets anymore. It's globalized. Some call the internet. Some call an internet. You don't have to go to a market anymore. You used to go to a market and build it. That's when I started my career. You would go every year and you would build it. And then people would come back. And then they tell people more people come back. And then you'd do local TV and local radio. And man, was it a lot of work. And then you'd capture emails or text numbers. And you'd let the people know when you're coming back. And in fact, when I started, there was a guy named James Gregory, a comic in Georgia, that was still doing postcards. You'd fill out a postcard and he'd send it to you when he was coming back. It was word of mouth. Guess what? Guess what, everybody? We have something called the internet. Yeah, the same people in Chicago that watch my videos, that see my ads, that see my promotions, the same people. What? I mean, I love it. I had a blast doing it in Chicago. The amount of work and the mental anguish, I wanted to say abuse, anguish, I go through for these dates. And I'll write a book one day. Because, you know, a lot of people think they got one over on me. You don't got one over on Ornie Adams. I see it all. I jot it down. I've told this story before. There was a comic in New York City one time. I asked if I could switch a spot so I could do an extra spot that night. Used to do like 5, 6, 7, 8 spots a night in New York City. And this comic said to me, I can't let you go before me, which means I'm at this club. I'll tell you where I was. I was at the comic strip. I had to get uptown to stand up New York. And if I didn't go on right then, I would miss my spot at Stand Up New York. And I'd lose money. And I would be not professional. Or I'd be late and I'd screw up the whole lineup. And something happened, like the show was running late because I space it right. And he said, no, I can't. I got another spot at this other club. I said, okay. Well, thanks, man. So he, you know, it's cool. You know, it's the schedule. I'm not going to, it's his spot time. He gets it. I can't complain about that. When he was on stage, I called that other club. Guess what? Didn't have a spot at that club. I still know his name. I never said anything to him. I still, every time I see him, every time I see his name on social, because we're friends on social media, I think of that story. I think of that story. I see through the bullshit. And I'm not hanging out with people like that. Never said anything. Never changed my demeanor towards this person. But I know. I know. I know. I keep it up here. Keep little notes. I'm like Santa Claus. A naughty and nice list. Got a naughty and nice list. Buddy guy is still playing, still breaking strings because he put in the time. He's got the goods. He's got the goods. Told you, I'm breaking strings on this interview. I'm letting the Ornie out. I'm fired up. Oh, look at my notes. Is Staples becoming the new Radio Shack? Is that what's going on? I bought ink for my printer. As you can see, I print everything. And then I got rewards back. I have $140 in rewards for Staples that expires tomorrow. I can't find anything to buy. I can't find anything. I thought I'd be able to buy like a hard drive. They have the worst hard drives, the worst SD card cards, the worst thumb drive. I mean, what is going on over there? I went into a Staples the other day. I got depressed. What's going on, Staples? Can I come in and overhaul your entire store for you? Make it a place that you want to go? Make a place that you walk in. You don't want to walk out immediately, but you want to spend money. Something like a Home Goods. How many soap pump things can I buy from Home Goods? I got enough. But they make it. They make it so you want to give them your money. Staples is depressing. They have this old like lighting in the ceiling that reminds you of when I was in high school, and the lighting's harsh and the products look old and there's dust. What are you doing? Me who loves to spend money, me who loves office supplies, me that needs electronics. I thought spending $140, thought this is going to be easy. Now I'm going to start calling family members today and say, does anybody need anything? Anybody need anything from Staples? Because I have $140 that I can't use. Oh, so I never said my announcement. Why am I? This is so funny. My Sharpie just ran out. Guess what I'm buying at Staples? Gonna have to get some Sharpies. All right. So here's the deal with Michigan. Here's a what's wrong. I'm going to sit back and tell everybody a little story called Michigan. Little story called Ornie Adams loves Michigan. I'm big on Michigan. I hadn't spent a lot of time there. You know what I did? I flew into Traverse City, was there for a couple of days, did a show, wandered around. Then I went to a place called Holland, Michigan, was there for several days in between making my way to Chicago, a little road trip, like the old days. And every single person, I'm not saying 90%, I'm not saying 85%, I'm not saying 95%, 100% of the people I ran into in Michigan were nice. every single person said hello when they passed in the street. Everybody answered any questions you had. Every waiter, waitress. There was no attitude. Nobody cut you off in traffic. Nobody cut you in line. I mean, LA yesterday, somebody, you know, when you walk into a place and you think the line is starting from this side, but it's really starting from the other side. There's somebody at the counter. It's only one person at the counter. And I'm at the, you know, I walk in the door and I stand behind that guy on his left. And then a woman, very attractive woman, comes in and she stands to his right. And I'm sitting there going, what is she doing? Why isn't she getting behind me? And I'm like, what's going on? And then came time, that guy left, and it's time for the next person. She walked right up to the register and ordered. And I was there. I was clearly there for her. She didn't look at me and say, were you waiting? Like, I'm not there every day. Sorry, I don't know where your line starts. But there's something called humanity. She knew I was there. But she was entitled. And that's the LA attitude. Everybody here is so selfish, lost. You know, one time I was flying in, I'd been shooting Teen Wolf. I was exhausted. I got in, or maybe I was coming from an overseas convention. It was something Teen Wolf. Maybe it was an overseas convention. I landed early in the morning and I was so exhausted. And when you land in Los Angeles, there's a sign as you walk to baggage claim, welcome to Los Angeles. And I was so tired. I look up and I read, welcome to Lost and Jealous. And that's what I think. This is a cesspool of narcissism, of unqualified narcissism. There's so many narcissistic people in this town that shouldn't be. They're delusional narcissists, delusional narcissists. I'm just thinking of this stuff is just coming out of my head differently than I'm thinking it. Sure, that's something that's wrong with me. And so everybody in Michigan, every single person, so nice. I said, I should live in a place like this. It's slower paced. Things are more reasonably priced. Everybody's nice. You don't leave the house and feel like crap about yourself. People don't look down on you. People aren't all edging to get ahead, to beat somebody in line for coffee. Think she could have waited a second? No. Everybody isn't so motivated to achieve. They're not to-do list braggers. That's what we have out here. Everybody's bragging about what they're... Yeah, listen, what I got today. Hey, want to go to lunch? I go to lunch, but I got two meetings, and then I'm under deadline for this, and I got to... Who cares? You're not what your to-do list is. Your to-do list doesn't define you in the rest of the world. Certainly not Michigan. Well, I had one incident. This is remarkable. For me to be in a place for 4 or 5 days and only have one run-in with somebody, I mean, come on. You know? I couldn't believe it. I walked back into the hotel, and there was a guy at the bar, and he said, it's pretty cold out there. And I said, yeah, it's, you know, but for Michigan, it was like 15 degrees. I go, this is a heat wave. Oh, I wouldn't know. I'm from California. And blah, 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 blah. Goes on. Bah, 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 bah. Guy's older than me. Bah, 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 bah. Going on. He's going to mansplain to me about California. This idiot didn't even think to ask where I was from. Guess what, idiot? I'm from California, too. And he goes, oh, yeah, I'm from Palm Springs. I said, Palm Springs? Too hot there. And no water. What do you mean there's no water? Then he turned to the bartender and just started talking to her. He was like arrogant and dismissive and just like start to, you know, because this guy's so cool. He's friends with the bartender. He's friends. You're a loser sitting alone at the bar. And you're upset because I said Palm Springs is too hot. And by the way, I was just being funny. I'm like, oh, it's too hot and there's no water. Like, just trying to start a conversation. Maybe the guy picks up, I know something about Palm Springs, and will think, oh, maybe this guy's from California too. This idiot didn't even make the connection. And then I got upstairs and I realized, you know what's amazing? The one person on the trip that was rude to me was from California. was not from Michigan, was from California. And I thought, that's it. What more do you need to know? What more do you need to know? This city grinds on your soul and your head every single day. It's like an electric screwdriver into your cranium. Just, oh, want to pay higher taxes? Want to pay higher gas? Want to be around people that everybody thinks are more talented and better than it looks down on you? Welcome to California. Welcome to, you want more crime, more homelessness? I mean, we have it all here. Quite a special place. And I love this place for a long time. And I hope it rebounds. I hope it comes back. I really do. I really, really do. Went to a restaurant there. I couldn't believe this. There was one of those, where is it? Let me call it up on camera. Wasn't that a leaf blower? I thought they outlawed those. Look at this. This is from a diner. Went to a diner. It's a diner in Traverse City. I can't remember the name. Maybe it's the omelet place. Really, yeah, again, everybody was so nice. In fact, a lot of people like approached me, like they knew me. And even the way they approached me was really kind of cool and nice. And that happened at that diner. That's why I just thought of that. But at the top of the menu, and you don't see this at the top of the menus here in Los Angeles. It says, a 3% surcharge is added to all checks to help offset fast rising expenses. This fee is not a service charge or gratuity. Now I'm confused. So now there's surcharge, service charge, and gratuity. And here's my thing. A 3% surcharge is added to all checks to help offset fast rising expenses. This is on the laminated menu. Okay? Raise your prices 3%. You want to offset? Raise your prices. Stop sneaking in these surcharges. They've got to outlaw this. It's bullshit. The price is the price. And I'm going to put this on the list too. Screw you, gas stations. One price. One price. There's not, we're going to add, in California, they add 20 cents per gallon if you charge. Michigan didn't add anything. I respect that. Another reason why I love Michigan. But, so now surcharge, service charge, and gratuity. And it's right at the top. Thank you for supporting independent restaurants. Well, then, and then it says other locations and more info here. So how are you independent? There's other locations. Whole thing's a contradiction. Raise the price of the omelet 3%. Raise it so you can pay everybody fairly. We're tired of this shit. I'm not going to restaurants anymore that have these surcharges. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Look at this. This is from a really... Oh, I hope I didn't just show what it was. This is from a really nice restaurant in Venice Beach. Right on Abbot Kinney. Okay? It says... A 20% mandatory service charge is added to your check. Our belief, guess what? I don't give a crap what your belief is. My belief is nothing should be mandatory. What's mandatory is the price on the menu. Now, I didn't see this on the menu. I'd like to go back and find out if on the menu, on the top, it says a mandatory service charge. Because I'd walk out. A mandatory service charge has been added to your check. Our belief is that every hourly, name of the restaurant, employee contributes to your service. That's true. That's why they get wages. Wages that should come out of what you charge us for the food. And 100% of the MSC. Oh, now they're being all cute. Mandatory service charge. MSC. They're going to brand it. Will be distributed amongst them. How about you do this? Okay, because a bottle of wine was $70. So you have to pay 20%. That's $14 right there. Salad was $18. Short rib was $45. Of what? Of that $45, the bill was $248. They added $41 as the MSC, and then had the, so now the total is 272. The chutzpah, I'll put it up on the screen, the chutzpah to charge the MSC, and then when you charge it, there's a tip line. A tip line. And when you ask them, I'm still confused. Well, is this a tip? The way they explain it, it's like they must have used the greatest wordsmith of all time to make it sound like they're saying it's a tip, but it isn't a tip at the same time. No, it's not. Well, it goes, is that the tip? Yes. Is that the tip? They don't say yes. Is that the tip? Well, it goes to, the MSC goes to all the employees working, the dishwashers, all the people in the back, and food prep people, and the chefs, and, oh, okay, so it's a tip. They make a face. Like, they never say it's a tip. And then when you charge it, there's a tip line. And here's my thing. It's not mandatory. It's not mandatory. In fact, people should stop paying it. And, it really makes people not want to be generous. We used to be generous. It used to be 15% was standard. And it was 15% pre-tax. So if the food was $100 and then with tax it's $110, you would tip on $100. And that you tip 15%. And then some people were like, you know what? We're going to start giving 20 if we really like them. Now it's, you know, at checkout, it says 20, 22, 25. 15 is not even a consider. You leave 15, they think you're cheap. And, you know, when you're sitting there dining for an hour and you're paying $41.40 for the mandatory service charge, which there should be a revolt. You have $45 for my short ribs. Pay everybody more than minimum wage. So they're happily making my short ribs. They're happily cleaning those dishes. They're happily sweeping the floor. They're happily making the drinks behind the bar. Pay them. When did this switch? In what other aspects of life is this going to go into? They're going to be mandatory service charges on airplanes to pay the pilots more. When you go into stores, you go into an electronics store, they're going to charge you, or a supermarket, there's going to be mandatory service charge for the employees. It's bullshit, and it needs to stop, and it's crap. I don't care if it's 3% in Traverse City, Michigan. I don't care if it's 20% here. It's wrong. It's wrong. I'm telling you it's wrong. Irritating. And it made the end of that meal uncomfortable, made us feel cheap for not tipping on top of that. When you go in and you look at the price and go, oh, it's $45, $70 for the wine, blah, 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 blah. In your head, you're already calculating in that you're going to pay a tip on top of that. But to pay that service charge and then to be made to feel like crap, like it isn't enough. You're going to put a tip line. That's what I mean. The world is out of control. It's got to end. People taking advantage of people has got to end. That's why everybody's in a bad mood. And I'm going to discuss this article in a few minutes I read online in the New York Times about this depressed feeling so many people have. I think the world's coming to an end every day unless I'm on stage. And when I look out on stage, I go, wow, I have hope. Everybody here is laughing at the same things. This guy looks different than she does and he does, and they're young and they're old, but everybody's laughing. Everybody's getting it. Everybody's getting the absurdity of the world, and that's what we need. We don't need to be felt to be taken advantage of. I'm sorry, but $45 for a short rib is already being taken advantage of. And then you want to take advantage of me again and again and again, and you don't want to be the hero and pay, oh, you're not going to pay your employees enough, but I'm going to stick it to the customer. Stop sticking it to the customer. I want to go back to the customer's always right. I want to go back to the days when you can say, hey, I'd like to speak to your manager, and it did something. And there was a manager that wasn't 12 years old. I wonder why my audience is so old. I need to attract a younger audience. You know, here's my appeal for the people that support me. start sharing my content with younger people. When I see younger people in the audience, and they love the show. They love my show. They love what I do. But for some reason, it's more older people. And they're going to be dead soon. So then what happens to my career? I'm performing for empty rooms again. And then it turns out Pittsburgh was right. Let me read this. Boy, is it warm here in Los Angeles. I might take the afternoon off and smoke a cigar and just enjoy life. Have I earned that? That's right, I can't. I've got to go to the post office. I've got to go to the bank. I've got to go get some food because I've been out of town for 10 days. So I guess that's not happening. Okay. Somebody sent me this. I mentioned Yogi Berra in the last podcast. He said, if you don't go to somebody's funeral, they won't go to yours. Funny guy. Unintentionally funny, I believe. Here's an article. I'll post it up here in the corner. You see where it came from? Yogi Berra explains jazz. Ready for this? Interviewer, can you explain jazz? Yogi, I can't, but I will. 90% of all jazz is half improv. The other half is the part people play while others are playing something they've never played with anyone who played that part. So if you play the wrong part, it's right. If you play the right part, it might be right if you play it wrong enough. But if you play it too right, it's wrong. Interviewer, I don't understand. Yogi, anyone who understands jazz knows that you can't understand it. It's too complicated. It's what's so simple about it. It's too complicated. It's what's so simple about it. This guy's just a walking contradiction. And I've seen him speak. He's not doing it on purpose. Interviewer, do you understand it? No. That's why I can't explain it. If I understood it, I wouldn't know anything about it. Interviewer, are there any great jazz players alive today? Yogi, no. All the great jazz players alive today are dead. Except for the ones that are still alive. But so many of them are dead. The ones that are still alive are dying to be the ones that are dead. Some would kill for it. This guy would be a great politician. We'd elect this guy. We would elect this guy in America. Yes, we would. Yes, we would. Well, I'm not going to get to some of this stuff today. This show's already close to going over in time. I want to discuss this. This article, I saw it on the New York Times. I was reading it on the plane. I immediately sent it to my uncle because last month his wife passed away after a battle with cancer. And it was a long, hard battle, and it was upsetting to lose her. And this article made me think of him. And I'll read you what he told me afterwards. But this is an article, and you're going to see how powerful it is. And this is why I encourage people to go to comedy shows. Go to comedy shows. Because you need communal laughter. Okay, you can sit at home and watch stand-up comedy, not me, but other people on these streaming services. And you can sit there alone and laugh. And you can isolate. The world is set up for isolation right now, right? You've got all the, you know, like yesterday I watched one of the Oscar-nominated films that's still in the theaters, but because I'm Screen Actors Guild and I vote on these films for the awards, I get to see it on my own TV. So, The Leftovers, I think it was called. The Paul Giamatti, a great film. He's an unbelievable actor. Somebody who's just really dialed into his art. Beautiful. Zen to watch. And there it is, coming to me in my house. I want to make my own popcorn. I can make my own popcorn. If I don't have my own popcorn, I can have it delivered within an hour. I can have food delivered. I can have everything I need brought to me. I need to interact with somebody outside of my house. I can video call or Zoom call. The world is built for isolation. It's not healthy. It's not healthy. That's why I know the struggle. When all these people come out to my shows and they sell out in Chicago, I know something's going on because you don't have to leave the house. Every time you are about to leave the house, you think, do I really need to leave the house? That's why I've called for a mandatory lockout. You know, when we were locked in during COVID, I'm now calling for us to make everybody get out of the house 8 hours a day just for your health. You don't work out on a Peloton. Go to the gym. I really believe this, not to malign Peloton. I'm sure it's a great product. I've never done it. I'm sure it's, but there used to be groups of people in a room sweating on their bikes with an instructor. But now we've designed the world for isolation. This article, let me read this. It's by Sharon Brose. I'm going to say a few things wrong in this article, including her name. B-R-O-U-S. Train yourself to always show up. A somewhat obscure text, this is the article, a somewhat obscure text about 2,000 years old has been my unlikely teacher and guide for the past many years. And the guide for the past many, oh my God, I just started thinking. As I'm reading, I'm thinking, geez, I'm reading this really well. And my mind wandered. I hate when my mind wanders and I fly, because I'm looking at, I've got two different screens. I'm trying to look into the camera. All right, let me start this again. We won't edit that out. You know what I was thinking was, I started thinking, I'm like, wow, there's so many people at my shows that mention my podcast and how they relate to it. And then I always ask people, do you like me alone? Do you like me when I have a guest? And most people like me alone 70% of the time. But as I was reading this, I was thinking, this is a really good podcast. I started thinking, who should I send this to listen to? I'm really proud of this one. And then the next thing you know, I'm repeating a line. So focus, Orny Adams. Okay, here's the article. A somewhat obscure text about 2,000 years old has been my unlikely teacher and guide for the past many years and my North Star these last several months, as so many of us have felt as if we've been drowning in an ocean of sorrow and helplessness. Now I'm stuck on North Star. You know what a North Star is, right? It's a fixed constellation above the North Pole that we can use to guide us in life. And this has been her North Pole, as we've been drowning in an ocean of sorrow and helplessness. Buried deep within the Mishnah, that must be a Yiddish word, a Jewish legal compendium from around the 3rd century, is an ancient practice reflecting a deep understanding of the human psyche and spirit. Ready for this? When your heart is broken, when the specter of death visits your family, when you feel lost and alone, and inclined to retreat, you show up. That's what I'm saying. You don't stay inside and isolate. When something bad happens, get out of bed, confront the world. There's goodness out there. I see it when I'm on stage. I see the goodness. I see the goodness more in Michigan than I do in Los Angeles. That's for sure. But there's even goodness in Los Angeles. I see it. I see it from time to time. You have to sort of, you know, wade through. It's almost like you're in the ocean. It's a bunch of seaweed and muck. And you got to push that aside and then you'll see the goodness. She continues. The text, Midot 2.2, describes a pilgrimage. I know I'm saying everything wrong. Describes a pilgrimage ritual from the time of the Second Temple. Several times each year, hundreds of thousands of Jews would ascend to Jerusalem, the center of Jewish religion and political life. They would climb the steps of the Temple Mount and enter its enormous plaza, turning to the right en masse, circling counterclockwise. Turn to the right feels like clockwise. Turn to the left feels like counterclockwise. Anyway, meanwhile, the brokenhearted, the mourners, and here I would also include the lonely and the sick, would make the same ritual walk, but they would turn left and circle in the opposite direction, every step against the current. And each person who encountered someone in pain would look into that person's eyes and inquire, what happened to you? Why does your heart ache? They would say, my father died. A person might say, there are so many things I never got to say to him. Or perhaps my partner left. I'm completely blindsided. Or my child is sick. We're awaiting the test results. Those who walked from the right would offer a blessing. May the Holy One confront you, they would say. You're not alone. And then they would continue to walk until the next person approached. The timeless wisdom speaks to what it means to be human in a world of pain. This year, you walk the path of the anguished. Perhaps next year, it'll be me. I'll be the one going left instead of right. I hold your broken heart knowing that one day you will hold mine. Is that beautiful? I hold your broken heart knowing that one day you will hold mine. I read this, as she continues, I read in this text many profound lessons, two particularly pertinent in our time, when so many of us feel that we are breaking. First, do not take your broken heart and go home. Don't isolate. Step towards those whom you know will hold you tenderly. And on your good days, the days when you can breathe, show up then too. Because the very fact of you seeing those who are walking against the current, the people who can barely hold on, and asking with an open heart, you ask them with an open heart, tell me about your sorrow. Maybe the deepest affirmation of our humanity, even in terrible, inhumane times. People need people. Find the humanity. Article continues. It is an expression of both love and sacred responsibility to turn to another person in her moment of deepest anguish and say, your sorrow may scare me. It may unsettle me, but I will not abandon you. I will meet your grief with relentless love. We cannot magically fix one another's broken hearts, but we can find each other in our most vulnerable moments and wrap each other in a circle of care. We can humbly promise each other, I can't take your pain away, but I can promise you won't have to hold it alone. Showing up for one another doesn't require heroic gestures. It means training ourselves to approach, even when our instincts tell us to withdraw. It means picking up the phone and calling our friend or colleague who is suffering. It means going to the funeral, into the house of mourning. It also means going to the wedding, into the birthday dinner. I don't want that. Let me stop there. I don't want to go to the wedding. Or the birthday dinner. That I don't want. Now that I disagree with. You know, let the other people go to the birthday. I'll be there for the sorrow. I'll be there to help pick up the pieces for you. I'll be there to give you the hug. I'll be there on stage to try and make you laugh in bad times and point out the absurdity of the world. But I'm not going to your birthday party. I have phobia. Fear of being included. Team phobia. Fear of being included, not FOMO, fear of missing out. Those people go to the birthday parties. Those go to the weddings. Those go to the anniversary parties. Phobia, fear of being included. Small, tender gestures remind us that we are not helpless, even in the face of grave human suffering. How many times have you been down and you go out and just a simple gesture, somebody holds the door for you, somebody lets you go ahead of them in line, doesn't cut them like that person yesterday at the coffee shop. How many times does one simple thing just make you want to burst out into tears? We need more of that in the world. Need to stop pointing out how we're all different. Stop watching this news versus that news. It's crap. We maintain the ability, even in the dark of night, to find the way to one another. We need this, especially now. Here's the second lesson from that ancient text. Humans naturally incline toward the known. Our tribes can uplift us, order our lives, give them meaning and purpose, direction and pride. But the tribal instinct can also be perilous. The more closely we identify with our tribe, listen, the more likely we are to dismiss or even feel hostility towards those outside it. Meaning, don't isolate within your group. There's too much division caused in the world by tribalism. Oh, and now she uses the word tribalism. One of the great casualties of tribalism is curiosity. And when we are no longer curious, when we don't try to imagine or understand what another person is thinking or feeling or where her pain comes from, enough with the her, whatever happened to his pain? Our hearts begin to narrow. We become less compassionate and more entrenched in our own worldviews. That's it. That's what I love about taking the train in New York City. You look around, it's Noah's Ark. There's one or two of everything. And we're all basically the same. I get so tired of tribalism. There's another important lesson from the ancient text on pilgrimage. Those who enter the sacred circle and turn left when nearly everyone else turns right are grieving or unwell. But the text offers that there is another who turns left, the person sentenced to ostracization, in Hebrew being ostracized. Ostracization. It only applied to people who believed to have brought harm or so, blah, blah, blah. The ostracized were essentially temporarily excommunicated. They had to distance themselves from their colleagues and loved ones. They were not counted in a prayer or counted in a prayer quorum. Jews have to have a certain number of people to pray at times. 12. Though sometimes you can count the Torah. It's... And incredibly, they too enter the second space where they too are asked, tell me what happened to you. So the ostracized would go to the left too. What's your story? And they too were blessed. This is breathtaking. The ancient rabbis asked us to imagine a society in which no person is disposable. Even those who have hurt us, even those whose views are antithetical to ours, must be seen in their humanity and held with curiosity and care. We desperately need a spiritual rewiring in our time. Imagine a society in which we learn to see one another in our pain. To ask one another, what happened to you? Imagine what we hear, one another's stories. Say amen to another person's pain and even pray for another person's healings. I call this the amen effect, sincere, tender encounters that help us forge new spiritual and neural pathways. That's right. We need neural rewiring by reminding us that our lives and our destinies are entwined. We're all part of a bigger picture here. We're not this territory, that territory. It's bullshit. By the way, you look at the map of the United States and there's Canada and Mexico. This is all created by man. These are man-made territories, man-made tribes. Because ultimately, it is only by finding our way to one another that we will begin to heal. The article is called Train Yourself to Always Show Up. Now, Sharon Brous, B-R-O-U-S, is a rabbi and the founding senior rabbi of Ikar, a Jewish community based in Los Angeles, and the author of The Amen Effect. I sent this to my uncle on the plane. I'm still fascinated that we can get Wi-Fi on the plane. And this is what he texted back. And I asked his permission. Can I read this? He wrote, thank you so much. I just ordered the book for delivery tomorrow so I can read it on the way to LA. The best thing about the post is that it doesn't require belief in God or any other supernatural being, nor does it require membership or even active association with a tribe or religion. It is about finding spiritual peace by being a better human, by giving compassion and empathy to others who are down and being open to receiving kindness from strangers who don't think like you or look like you. Smart. My uncle's smart. He got it. And more of us need to get it. And more of us need to cut the crap out. And I know this is a podcast, comedy podcast, but sometimes it's important to remind. Sometimes it's okay to use the comedy podcast as a vehicle to deliver this type of message. And this article, written by a rabbi, could have been written by a priest, could have been written by a monk, could have been written by any religion, Muslim. I don't care. The message is what I care about. We need to look each other in the face and see what we have in common. I see it. I see many people that don't look like me getting me when I'm on stage. And I ask the world to have that sort of tolerance. And I'll say this. I wanted to talk about a lot of the new routines that I did in Chicago. But you'll have to come see me in Sarasota. But I'll say this. Listen, you may not have the same religion as me, the same beliefs as me. You may not be in the same country as me. But anybody else there not like the taste of mustard anymore? Something happened during COVID that I can't taste. If mustard's on a sandwich, it makes me almost want to vomit. What is this? This is only developing the last couple of years. I used to love mustard. I used to carry in my fridge, I would have 3 or 4 different kinds of mustard. And now I no mustard. I want to love mustard again. What is this? And please don't write me letters telling me, oh my God, it means you have this, you're going insane. It's the first sign of delirium, is you don't like the taste of mustard. Please don't tell me that. Please write Knight's letters to me at whatswrong@ornieadams.com. That is the email. And check out my tour schedule. My tour schedule is at ornieadams.com/tour. And I want to say this before I play the theme again. I can't thank everybody enough for coming to my shows in these cities. We are showing the people that don't believe in me, the people that have suppressed my career and kept it down, the people that didn't want to give me a shot, the internet, YouTube, this podcast, and the few people that support me. You know, Whitney Cummings sent me a beautiful clip of her defending me on her podcast again with Dan Cummings. Now, why is she so remarkable? And why do I need to be defended? What have I done so wrong? I don't know. But I'm asking you, if you could take the time to go on an Apple Podcast or Spotify and write a review if you like this and say why you like it. Go onto my videos and write something. I'm asking you, I'm fine. I never wanted to be the one to ask anybody to do this, but I'm starting to see the power of the numbers. If you like my stand-up comedy, please pass it on. Pass on my More Than Loud video on YouTube to other people, my clips on Instagram and TikTok. Share them. I'm starting to understand this. We're starting to take over. Things have tipped. And then I'll come to more markets. Everyone's like, when are you coming to Portland? When are you coming to DC? When are you coming to Pittsburgh? I'm not going to these places until they believe in me as much as you believe in me. I get it now. We're on to something. And it's going to be fun. And I just had another thought, and I forgot it. What's wrong with my mind?
What's his name, Kev?
Episode 102. What's wrong with Ornie Adams? Keep in touch. The email is whatswrong@ornieadams.com. And just, if you share it, please share it with younger people. Got enough old people coming to my shows. I'm kidding. I love anybody, and I really appreciate. In fact, Mancow, who was a huge radio personality in Chicago, always comes to my shows. Couldn't be more supportive. And he said to me, you know, after the show, he said, you know, sometimes you call your audience a bunch of losers. I go, yeah, I'm just kidding. He goes, no, I think they think you actually think they're losers. I said, ah, there's no way they think. I really think they'll. He goes, yeah, you know, these people paid money to see you. They got babysitters. He said, prop them up. Tell them how great they are. So these old people, they're not old. You guys are young at heart, and I love it. So thank you for supporting me. Thank you for coming back, and we'll see you for episode 103. And I think I broke a lot of strings in this episode, and I'm going to keep bringing more and breaking more, and I'm going to do another special this year. I have to. And then I'm going to let the Ornie Adams out. Thanks.